Chapter 1. As he walked along the Strand later that day, and not for the first time in his life, Callum Jardine had been left to reflect on the effect of coming back home from an area of conflict, something he had done after the Great War, and more than once since. The discomfort caused by both the experience of battle and his personal knowledge of what was happening in the Horn of Africa, set against the palpable indifference of those with whom he now mingled on one of London's busiest thoroughfares. If the people he jostled and passed had concerns about events elsewhere in the world, it did not show. The Italians were busy annexing Ethiopia, using liberal doses of poison gas against spear-carrying tribesmen and civilians, while Nazi Germany, having torn up the Treaty of Versailles, had remilitarized the Rhineland, daring both France and Britain to react, and crowing when they failed. Having got away with that breach of their international obligations, the Nazis were now putting the thumbscrews on Austria to join them and create a greater German Reich, stirring up what support they had to create instability. Here at home, Britain's own fascist leader, Oswald Mosley, was ranting and raving at his black shirts, being praised by the Daily Mail and becoming more like a cut-price version of Adolf Hitler every time he opened his mouth. He could not help but wonder at what occupied the minds of those on the crowded pavements, apart from the everyday need to earn a crust. Was it sport, perhaps? Fred Perry had won at Wimbledon for the third time. The Indian cricket team was struggling through a long summer of defeats. The supporters thrilled by Wally Hammond's century, showing a return to form for England's best batsman. And across the pond, Max Schmeling had knocked out Joe Lewis. If the nation was still in the grip of an economic depression, it hardly showed in the metropolis, especially in the short dead-end road that led to the imposing entrance of the Savoy Hotel, filled with taxis and long black limousines, all overseen by a magnificently attired doorman. The effects were being felt elsewhere, in mining villages and valleys, in the northern industrial centres and idle shipyards. That induced a slight feeling of guilt, given his destination. Still, lunch at Simpson's was always something to look forward to. Properly aged rib of beef or saddle of lamb carved at the table, though it was not a place where the matters on which he was ruminating would stir even an eyebrow. To the denizens of Simpson's, the unemployed were lazy, not benighted. The dropping of mustard gas on innocents, as long as they were black or brown, more likely to lead to a degree of indifference rather than condemnation. The spread of fascism in Europe, from the Black Sea to the Baltic, would be seen as a minor irritation in one of the great food bastions of the British upper crust. The clientele tended to be people who had a lot of admiration for anyone who made the trains run on time, added to a less than charitable attitude towards trade unions or workers demanding a decent standard of living. Peter Lanchester was already ensconced, nursing a schooner of sherry, looking very much at home in the grand divan. The dark panelled dining room was full, as usual, and there was the odd glance of recognition as the new arrival made his way to the table. London society was a touch incestuous, and he was, after all, a person who carried with him a certain amount of notoriety. Not many people can claim to have been acquitted of murder in an infamous crime passionnel. Good manners insisted he made eye contact with the one or two people who could be said to be part of his wife's social circle, as well as some of the very attractive ladies present. He was by nature incapable of ignoring them. In turn, they could not disregard the arrival of an extremely good-looking man, well-dressed, but with a hint of the rogue in him, obviously very fit and sporting a deep and even suntan, of the kind hard to achieve under English skies.
"Cal, old boy, you look as if you'd just come back from yachting with our besotted monarch."
Said loud enough to be overheard at several tables, the remark was greeted with blank looks by the ignorant and a cold stare by the very few in the know. Edward, the yet-to-be-crowned King of England and Emperor of India, was sailing in the Mediterranean with his American lover, Wallace Simpson, divorced once and filing for a second, causing tongues to wag in the higher reaches of society, though the great unwashed at home were being kept in ignorance by a